been loud, and I think we've had it filed on the website, but to start off with some city operations to draw attention to, for a few folks to draw attention to, Alaska Airlines is still working, making their way here. That's kind of stuck in bankruptcy court in Delaware, and we really don't know how long it's going to be, but Alaska, I talked on Monday, he said we're just standing by for some of those details, so we're going to have to get a bankruptcy judge to authorize that use of that facility on the Raven facility. Yeah, I've been, Brooks is on, Lori and I and Brooks, we probably worked, I don't know, a whole lot of this week together, but I want to thank Brooks out here too for some great work and being right there when we needed him. It's been good because it's been, as everybody right for us pretty quick, but I appreciate that support. We did get a partial order of PPE, or we have, excuse me, I should say it's on the way from the state. I haven't gotten confirmation of it yet, but so that part is on its way. That's a little bit of good news in there. One of the things is just kind of a general comment is about, I just can't stress enough to folks here and folks that are listening that, the only way we're gonna pull this off is if everybody is involved and everybody follows the rules and is disciplined about, how you go about protecting yourself and the community. We did have our coronavirus task force meeting last Friday. It was just right after Mandate 16 came out Wednesday night, and Mandate 17 came out Thursday night. So we discussed those, 16 being the Reopen Alaska Responsibility Plan. It's the first phase. It's actually, it says Phase 1A, and then Health Mandate 17 is Protective Measures for Independent Commercial Vessels, and I'll talk about that here in a bit. And this is, I put in there my impression of, I've had different opinions on this, but overall, it sounds good on paper to me. I just, as we even spoke on the radio today, I just think it comes up short on having teeth. Enforcement and having enough teeth to make it work. The hospital is expecting large order PPE from the state any day. We did talk about the CARES Act funding, talked to finance and budget this Monday night and addressed that a little bit, and I talked a little more in detail after a bit. Tom Tilden was, he's part of our task force, and he brought up a part that I hadn't thought about, deliberate thought, but really it's about, the whole mental health state of folks. We're getting bombarded with coronavirus this, coronavirus that, and so we're going to put together some materials to go out and try to help folks help themselves with this bombardment and try to get some reduce some stress that way. Schools, both of the school districts are still talking a graduation ceremony, and they're trying to work out something that they can do within the bounds of all this coronavirus mandate and in this environment. Well, we did kind of a walkthrough, a visual verbal walkthrough of the harbor area. We're going to order up a number of things that we talked to Caleb about, and he kind of brought this up too. So we're going to order some hand sanitizers, some hand wash facilities, some good signage, porta potties, that kind of stuff. So that area is better set up for a situation like a virus coming in. We still are trying to obtain a solution for, I think we need two different areas. One is if fishing personnel, crew members become ill and have to, not ill enough hospitalized, but ill enough to, they'd be all positive, and or ill enough to go into an area for some seclusion. So working on that. And the other area is basically for crew members. Sometimes they you know, lose their job or go looking for another boat or something like that, and they've got to have some place to stay with cots, things like that. We did send in a request for that to the state EOC, and it was denied. I was thinking we were going to get just some tentage from the National Guard or someone like that, but the response was no, they need it for themselves. So we're trying to. I engaged another way with some of the industry folks, looking for maybe BBRSDA and BBHC CEOs. They're going to help. Solve that for us, but our time is running short. I did get two quotes just to get an idea about what it would cost for a roving security patrol, and they're widely varied, but for a 24/7 roving patrol for a total of about 10 weeks, 8 weeks for the fishing season, basically June and July, and then 2 weeks to come in ahead of time to do their quarantine, which is 2 weeks from now. So we are, we are charging forward on that. We did have a meeting with the chief of staff, the governor's chief of staff yesterday, and Commissioner Crum and a number of leaders. And I think, we had some good, and Vice Edmund was there too, had some good discussion. But the chief of staff is going to take this on for both sides, for east and west sides, both, and try to get a comprehensive solution. They're going to send out a team, expert team to assess our security needs, and then have a recommendation for the governor's office. And I got the impression that they were going. I mean, they said it. They're going forward. I think you mentioned it today in the radio show. So that's some good news. Health update on the medical side. Right now, just looked up the numbers, 355 cases in Alaska, 240 recovered, 36 are still hospitalized with 9 deaths, and just got a text message, one of those automated test messages, that with 0 new cases today, so that's a good news story for the day. Let's see, we still are waiting mandate for set netters and sport fishing. I know I've heard both of them from the state, and we have not heard or seen really any discussion of it. So we're still kind of waiting because folks are asking us, and we don't really have anything to say right now to them. We can, we're just going to have to wait until the governor's office pushes that out. I've got the processor plans out for comments, and then basic comment period was just ended about an hour ago, and Laura's going to consolidate those comments from everyone, and we'll get a memo together for the governor's office. Another good news story, the meal board approved, and the hospital signed the lease for Grandma's House for overflow. So I think that's a significant issue, and that was resolved, and Chris Napoli's on here. He's part of that board, and part of another life of his. Thanks, Chris. We really needed that one, and that's going to help the area quite a bit in the city if we have to use it. It's there, so they do have a little bit of work to do. And as I've heard, correctly, they're going to be repairing a sprinkler system and doing a little bit of work inside there prior to being available for use. I think everybody's probably seen the letter from the CEO, Robert Clark, BBHC. He submitted the letter to the governor requesting the fishing season be shut down. Just wondered if you haven't heard about it, that letter's out there as well. In talking to Brooks, about this, about how... we'll get into the fishery-related use districts here in a little bit as part of our plan tonight. But one of the big questions was, okay, can you do this many tests? So what the hospital's telling us is yes they can. They're getting quite a bit of testing materials in. They anticipate that they will have plenty for the community and for the fishing fleet processors. They used as a factor, just as to order materials to have pre-tests available for every processor, fisherman, and fishing related activities. So they use that as a factor to bring in, and we're likely to at least do one here, probably two for sure, but one for sure, two if possibly two. Another good news story for on the medical side, Samaritan's Purse has notified the hospital that there's a 25-bed modular hospital complete with nurses and docs, and it's ready for deployment whenever they need it. It sounds like they're just standing by as soon as they need it. They just fly in with the charter plane, unload and set it up. What they're looking at will likely go on the other side based upon just sheer numbers, but I think they're going to hold off on pulling the trigger on that until, you know, we see how things develop as the season goes on. Critical community services, really, there's not much of a change here. We've got everything still running as we had the last week. The roads as normal this time of year, just after all that snow and moisture, you know, you drive around, a lot of them are in rough shape. They're up at NERCA yesterday, today, and tomorrow, trying to fix that area in NERCA. Squaw Creek is quite a mess, but they're getting around to the worst ones as they can. I hate to say it, but we just got to have patience because we just don't have that many folks to do all the work, and they're going to get to it when they can. So community services are up and operational. Let's see. No difference really on our communication with neighboring communities, other than to our players, we stay connected to them very well through the process. Literally, Mayor Ruby and I almost speaking to him daily. So very happy about that, and being connected up to our tribe and town. And those partners are critical for our success and for us to move forward. Commercial fishing, did talk about the plans that are out. We'll get that. I did send it out to the coronavirus task force members, quite a cross-section of folks there, and it'll be interesting to see the comments back on the processor plans. The BBRSDA has put out a lot of information to the fishing fleet, and really their big thing is they're discouraging people from coming early, and in fact they want people to wait until the 1st of June before they come in, and they've also advised people fishermen that they just do actual required maintenance on your boat that you got to use for get out for this season, and then delay it till next year for just the average, not average, but non-critical, if you will, maintenance. We're looking at doing urgency ordinance tonight, and our focus, just as a reminder, that, you know, we really want a minimum of two COVID tests, a 14-day quarantine, and tightly enforced fisheries-related use districts from the day of arrival to completing the season. And one of those positive COVID tests, we keep pushing, and every meeting we're in, we want the results back before they get on a plane to come to Dillingham. Health mandate 16 now going through the mandates. That one is pretty wide open. It slowly opens some businesses. Did some things like, you know, you can only operate 25% of your receiving capacity, and the attachments, I think there's like 10 or 12 attachments, and it's business related, like it has some of the same general stuff in each attachment, some of the rules, and then they have a section for at the end for, you know, hairdressers and tattoo parlors and restaurants, that's a pretty extensive health mandate. I encourage you to look through there, see how it may or may not impact us. Health Mandate 17 is the big one that we've been working to get into this emergency ordinance, and they're kind of coupled up in a lot of different ways. But there's some. Then one of the things that was missing in there really was it doesn't require testing, which just has been a basic requirement of ours. It does, however, acknowledge that 14-day requirement. There's a flagging system in there. There's verbal, physical screening, social distancing, some of the same things. If you haven't read Mandate 17, I'd encourage you to do so and think about that. If you have questions or issues, send them in, of course. On the economic side, as I talked to the Finance and Budget Committee, met Monday night, and I went through the CARES Act of what we know and what I have heard in a number of meetings about the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska has $1.25 billion. That was the bottom, minimum funding for each state. So Alaska got the minimum $1.25 billion from the federal government. It was divided up by the governor's office, and we're not real sure what formula was used, but it was divided up, and we have a list of that. Right now, it's looking like $3.4 million for Dillingham, but we're not doing anything with it yet because the legislature is meeting. Actually, they're supposed to have met today, and they're meeting again. And there's some discussion of whether the governor has the authority to divvy up the money like that, or the legislature does. They're going to sort that out tomorrow. The funds are by the governor's plan. The funds were supposed to be released tomorrow on the first. Again, we'll see what happens when we hit tomorrow. These funds have to be spent by the end of the year, if not the 31st or 12:30, or it's going to be returned to the U.S. Treasury. One of the things that that is really a rule for these funds is you can't take this money and use it to replace any of our lost revenue through COVID. So that's one of the big no-nos of this funding. The rest, basically, it has to have a COVID pandemic nexus. So like our EOC, the only reason we stood up an EOC is to respond to the COVID virus. So that would be an authorized use of those funds. We don't have any mechanism right now in place that I'm aware of from the state. I suspect we're going to have to provide a monthly report to them. But Anita, we've already have mechanisms in place to keep track of the funding and keep track of the receipts, and so we know that the funding is each department has is identifying that. So we've got that on the list, and it's I think the date was March 27th that came out. So we can go back to March 27th if I'm correct. But right now I can't tell you much more than that. One of the things that was unfortunate, the governor had vetoed the school bond debt funding and said that he would fill it with COVID money. And obviously, from just what we talked about, he can't do that. Because the school bond debt had nothing to do with the pandemic. So I'm not sure what's in it. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that. I'm not sure where we're going. Apparently, the state had acknowledged today that we're not going to be able to use that to replace those funds. So that's something for council to kind of keep in the back of your mind. We did have a couple. I participated in a couple AML and AMMA calls. One of course was on the CARES Act here in your packet, but we've already discussed that. They were just reinforcing it and wanting to know, for each municipality to talk about what they're doing, what they're doing right, wrong, and share with the group. The second one, the AMMA was on Mandate 16, but something else another call that came up that I really had to get to, and so I only listened in about 20 minutes of that. Let's see, state of Alaska. So I talked a little bit about the governor's chief of staff and the meetings we've had. We had two since our last meeting on COVID-19 briefings. One was on the 24th, one was on the 29th yesterday. 24th really was, and the mayor can probably talk about this a little bit too, but it was really, to me, it was more of a, we're calling out, we're gathering you up, we want to know what's really going on. We need a point of contact. They really stressed that because they're getting hit with multiple points of, or multiple folks from the Bristol Bay region, and they're trying to answer to multiple places. So we established our EOC as the main point of contact for the state. That doesn't mean you can't reach out, especially elected officials, you know. But as far as routine, regular things, if you have something, we need to funnel them through the EOC. If it's political in nature, then especially Mayor Ruby, she's got to have direct contact. So that, you know, that's not even my world. I'm not going down there, but the EOC is our main focus. The call yesterday, we talked that a little bit, but one of the things we stressed, and Mayor Ruby stressed it multiple times, is that we need the information to flow through the cities and boroughs. We've had a significant problems of finding information from processors or from fishermen. We find it in the back door that this state has been out visiting with those folks, or BBR or RSDA, and hadn't ran through the basically the government for Bristol Bay area. So I think we got a point across. We will see how that goes. And then again, you know, Mayor Ruby was pushing a number of things in there that we need to have a test prior to coming to Dillingham. So that was. We're going to keep, that's our talking points. We're going to keep using our talking points. Talked about the assessment team. They got to come in, do a quick assessment, and send it likely to an Anchorage security company for action and coming on out here to help us with enforcement. And, let's see, I think it's...
Hi, this is Jason Matrokin from BDNC. We'd like to remind you that we can all help protect our communities from coronavirus. Please hunker down and practice social distancing by staying home as much as possible and limiting contact with people who don't live in your household. When you go outside, wear a mask and keep 6 feet between yourself and others.
Can Bob pause? Someone needs to go on mute.
And I still think that, talking with Brooks too, is Mandate 17 has an opening for us to do that. You know, they're basically acknowledging that there may be further mandates or restrictions by the local communities. So that was helpful. We're going to capitalize on that. One of the things that I read, I'm not sure why I had it on here, about the in the industry meetings, that we talk about the anxiety levels in our community. I was reading about things, and I hope there's some folks listening out there, and this article was, written by a mental health person and professional, and just they emphasized that there's nonstop coverage on TV. Just turn the TV off, or limit how much you listen to, or maybe you listen to 5 o'clock news, see what happened today, but turn that off, because it's that constant repetitive. You can't get coronavirus out of your mind. The other thing they said is to walk away from Facebook. There's a lot of negativity floating around in Facebook, and people it's like a whirlwind. You get caught up in that whirlwind, and he said that's been a significant, although it's a great tool for social media, it can definitely not be advantageous when we're looking at this pandemic and the impact it's having on people's mental health, and a lot of a a lot of emphasis on getting outside, getting a little sun, getting some fresh air, and we'll and that was a good backup to Tom Tillman and talk about. And we'll we'll produce some information flyers. We'll get it from talk to the hospital and the mental health folks up there, and we're gonna put it into our rotation, and we'll talk to KDLG and see if we can't get that message out on top of it. Everything else, try to help people stress level have it come down a little bit. Got the road ahead down there, really just more of the same, but we're got planning. We really need to have a solution for the ill and the health of the people that are wandering around, but either looking for a ride home or trying to go to get a job on another boat. We will. We need to develop the security strategy, initiate action. In summary, really, I mean, that's what's happened in the last week or so. And really, it's, we're trying hard as we can to push proactivity. In this case, we can't be reactive because it's too late. So we're staying ahead of the wave right now, but barely. So we need to start. We need action. And we need action now. We've got about 30 days before the bulk of folks come. And that's my report for this week. Barring questions from you folks.
All righty. Council, anybody any questions for Todd on his weekly update?
I have some questions.
Okay, Greg. Go ahead.
Can you tell me more in depth about like the testing plan? Because I've not seen anything as far as a plan about tests. I'm kind of curious how that's to be implemented here. And that's kind of the first I've heard about there actually being testing up here.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, sir. In the rules that I put out for the fishing. The fishing season, that two-page memo with the maps. I laid out what, because there's two different ways people could potentially come in, but I laid out, a test prior to, within 72 hours of flight to here. Then if they quarantine here, they will they'll go straight to their quarantine area and then have another test comes back negative prior to them being released from quarantine. If they are, say, like the processors, Trident, those kind of folks have a great plan of taking over a floor of a motel in Anchorage and not letting anyone, go anywhere. They have security watching it. They will take a test within 70. That's what you guys will decide tonight, I guess, is what I should say. My recommendation is that they take a test within 72 hours. 72 hours came from Dr. Hyman about, as one of our medical experts, and because of the timing and the latency of tests and all the factors that she'd consider, taking a test and then doing their quarantine on that floor of the hospital or the motel, then come over here, take another test. And once they pass their test, then they're released from the quarantine. So
that's my really question is more about, like, if we say this, is that even reasonable to expect that that could actually happen? Like, who's doing testing? Who's paying for the testing? Do we even have the capacity to do testing is more of my question, because I can't get behind something that's not reasonable to even expect to happen.
Yeah, I briefed the hospital last week. Talked about it briefly. They said, yeah, we're going to, I said, one of the things we need to do this upcoming week in our ICS meetings at noon, I said, we need to find out the details. Where is it going to be? How are you going to set up? Same things you're asking, Greg, are you going to go down into the PAF yard and we're going to have, a line of folks coming through? So I want to get a reality check, and after they told me that they wanted to do that, but the testing's going to be available. Maybe they'll bring resources together. The actual logistics of the testing is to be determined right now. But I posed that same question to to the hospital staff, and we're going to think about it and work on it and get it. And then hopefully they will have a plan here mid next week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see. I had to go take a test, and it was only because doctors mandated. So like that, and then HIPAA is a question as well. And the only place that I haven't seen even testing in Alaska yet. And so the last thing I heard was that we have two Abbott testers, which can do a test in 15 minutes, and I can do the math real quick on that. So it's kind of, I know that the BBRC plan had that in there, but it's just like, is that even going to be reality, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't answer that right now. I have the same concerns. But, on the face of it, they said, yes, we can do it. I know that, it can be numbers, but when the practicality of it, and they're supposed to be faster tests, than a 15-minute test that are on the way at some point. But, checks in the mail. I'll have better information for you after this next week.
I have a few more questions for you, so.
Okay, thanks, Greg. I think Caleb had a question. And then we'll come back to you, Greg.
Thank you, Matt. I guess my question is just kind of getting testing. As it's written, are we testing out-of-staters coming to Dillingham and people from in-state coming to Dillingham, or only out-of-staters?
We're testing out-of-staters. We're testing in-staters. We're testing Dillingham residents that are fishermen.
Okay. Thank you.
And Tom, I think it would, if we're gonna council, if we're gonna move from Todd's update into the ordinance, maybe that will help explain sort of the difference between, or not the difference, but the details of the ordinance, and then also Todd's proposed rules, the Commercial Fishing 2020 Memorandum, which are sort of two different documents. And is there any other questions about Todd's update? And then maybe we'll just move right into the ordinance. And
Madam Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
This doesn't have anything to do with the ordinance, but just a question for Todd. You supplied in a separate email from NMS. Are you expecting action from the council tonight on that? You said it was kind of time sensitive.
No, that's we're going to get the data together. I owe the other side of the river a matrix tonight, and they're going to go to the chief of staff. That's where they're going to look at and bring in that assessment team, and then the state is in theory taking that over. So if there's no, so the short answer is no. Maybe bringing some to you next week, depending on what the state comes up with when we have a regular meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Alice, I have a question.
Okay, go ahead, Andy.
It wasn't discussed in Todd's report, but it was sort of a question instigated from Dan and Marge's email. And the question is probably whether we should be discussing at some point anyway, is how we're going to handle requests for people or residents actually involved in subsistence and recreational travel. So just a point I wanted to bring up. Maybe discussion later. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Andy. So, Council, any other questions on Todd's update? Caitlin.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have two quick questions. One about the school board and how the governor vetoed. First question on that is do we have the money to cover that currently? And the second question goes back to, I'll let you know real quick. Thank you.
Yeah, so we have
we still have about a $4 million general fund reserve that is out. So the short answer is, yeah, we do have the money to cover that. So we do. Of course, decision would come down to you guys, but where that may come from. But we do.
You know, the last quick question was what about contracting security? Does the state emphasize that they have some requirement to give us some sort of security or any indication of that?
Well, when I broached the subject, or they broached the subject with the chief of staff on the phone, I'd had some quotes, so I interjected in there, and that's what got the conversation started about the state coming in and doing the assessment here in NACNIC, and then providing the contract to the security companies from the state level, as opposed to us doing it individually. Which actually makes more sense to me. They can probably get a better deal, those kind of things. They have more leverage. They have more funding. They have all the tools to do it, and I was very glad to hear that. But we got to hold them to it now. That's what we're trying to do, is not let the fish off the hook, as they say.
Roger. And they said there would be the assessment within the next coming week. Is that correct?
They didn't say that, but I stressed pretty hard, and I think I got the impression that it might have worked, really. But I stressed that, hey, we gotta act, because doing the back planning, they gotta be here in 2 weeks to initiate their quarantine. So better get moving. So we didn't pin them down on an actual date. They threw that out there. We're following the manager. The two borough managers and I are following up tomorrow and pushing forward the information that they need, and we do have an active person in John that's going to help us out. He's kind of jumped in there too, so we're going to do everything we can to hold him to it. I think that's really important for us.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, question.
Alice, Andy here.
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Just a clarification on this last one. With the states involved, would they be, it seems to me they would probably be enforcing state mandates. Just curious as to whether we can, we can require that they also enforce our local mandate. Thank you.
Yeah, so that, Andy, that one is, they're hiring a security company. So they're going to report to Dan Pascarello. And they're not going to be armed. They're not going to be in the quote law enforcement capacity. They're going to be in a security capacity. So it would be like they see somebody that looks like a fisherman outside of the, if the rules go the way I laid it out, they see a fisherman downtown in the store, no mask, all that kind of stuff. They say, hey, they go talk to him, and then at that point, they would call dispatch and bring a uniformed officer down to address the situation. So they wouldn't, they were not really armed guard policing. They're more of a security and a radio call.
Thank you.
So if I can offer a little more detail on that too, Todd went out and was looking for estimates for additional security and staffing for Dillingham, and it just happened that we were in a meeting with the other municipalities and the governor's office earlier this week, and the governor's chief of staff said that something sort of general again about the state being willing to provide assistance to municipalities for enforcement, and it just happened that Todd had those estimates, already knew, had contacted, the Bristol Bay Borough to give them credit. They really pressed it. And that was when the Gov's chief of staff said, we'll talk to you, it began moving then. So the three managers here will be trying to put together by the three managers, meaning the two boroughs and the city, using some of this information Todd has and carrying that back to the governor's office to say, you know, you offered, here's what we need. But I believe that Commissioner Crum is the one who said, we'll send a team out to you know, investigate and see what's needed. They're also aware that, you know, even though the Bristol Borough and Gillingham and the Lake and Penn were the ones on the phone, that there are some other communities that are probably going to need also need help. So there are other, some of our neighboring communities also have pretty active fisheries and absolutely do not have any more resources than we do for, you know, trying to enforce. So it really did sort of work out. The other thing I would add is we've had those two meetings, and every time we bring up the mandate, the difficulties in trying to kind of protect our community with mandates that restrict our powers and also are often contradictory. And so they've said that they are willing to consider additional amendments to the mandate. And it's one of the reasons I've told several people, in fact, today, that they've stated they're willing to consider amendments to those mandates, particularly the boat mandate, which I'm sure if you've read it and you've detected some of the same things the people on the radio did today, that, you know, quarantining on a 32-foot boat is not something that's going to be necessarily practical, and just other elements like that. So at least the communication, the line of communication is there, and we'll try to hang with it and try to help make things better for us. It's not going to be perfect by any means, but help make them better. Any other questions for Todd on his update before we move into the ordinance? Greg, go ahead.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Greg, go ahead. Well, a question, has there been any kind of discussion about the state or anybody else providing more respirators to the area, respirators, ventilators, you know, the kind of equipment that we would need for responding to people that were sick with this?
I haven't heard that, Greg. I'll ask the next hospital meeting. They did brief that somebody worked on the two that they had, and I think they now have whatever viral filter they needed. Before we didn't have anything we could use. So I think there's two, but I'll ask and see if there's more resources like that coming. But really, if they get to the point to be in a respirator, their plan is not to have them here. If they need something like that, they got to go to Anchorage. In a pinch, planes can't fly, all that kind of stuff. Well, obviously, we got to do that. And I think that's their planning factor. But as soon as they can, they're going to get them on a plane and get them out of here.
Yeah, I guess I have like a statement. I'm kind of concerned. I really appreciate the willingness of Shepherd's Purse to volunteer and help out. And I really appreciate what they did here this summer with the cemetery. But I'm also concerned, and I need to speak about, you know, how political of an organization that is, and my concerns with that. So hopefully it won't get to that, but just as a statement.
Okay, thanks, Greg. I would offer, too, I had a chance to be in a meeting this week with the Anchorage mayor, and talking about some of our mutual mutual issues. And it is interesting, you know, Gillingham being the the largest population in Bristol Bay, we're experiencing some of the same pressures that Anchorage is, as far as being sort of a central point. And we're joined in the effort to try to influence the state and protect our citizens. That's kind of the priority for all the municipalities in the region. Okay, any other questions for Todd on his update? Okay, if not, I know there's going to be some citizens discussion on the rest of the workshop, so I do want to get to that so that we don't end up, dragging things down too long. So let's move on to the proposed ordinance. And this is a workshop. And first of all, let Todd sort of talk about what the proposed amendments are. Brooks is on the line and can answer questions. And let the council ask questions. And then, as with all workshops, you know, the public's invited to participate. So I'll call on them to make comments or suggestions or whatever once we get Todd's presentation out of the way and get council discussion out of the way. So Todd, maybe I'll turn it over to you first.
Okay, Madam Mayor. I guess if Brooks is on there, I might defer to him. I mean, I can tell you what came up kind of in generalities, but as far as writing, would you want here, or do you want me to give a general overview, or would it be better just have Brooks jump in?
Well, we do need a general overview of what the changes are that are being proposed, and whether it's you or Brooks, I think either one of you, we have confidence in you.
Okay. I'll run through this, just the generalities, what I had asked Brooks to write for us, and some of the ideas he came up. Also, we talked about how, you know, I had this vision of if we establish this district similar to the, like the airport with the essential air travel district, we assembled, wrote something on the ground and said, here's the rules for in here. That's kind of the vision that led me to the rules and trying to manage this pandemic. So Brooks came up with the idea of, I maybe used it before, but it's called a fisheries related use district. And there's in section 5, he established basically the definition of what that means. So we have two of those that are zoned for fishery related use that we're proposing tonight as part of that's the first piece, and I'm just going chronologically here. That's the first piece in a general overview. In section 6, the permitted use is one of the things we had trouble with the emergency ordinance and the mandates. When you read through that, we literally had to have, you know, Electigec residents, you know, file for a travel permit to come to Dillingham, and you know, something we thought about that and talked about it, and Brooks wrote this, the permitted uses to alleviate that issue, where the Electigec Dillingham and the Lake Road in between, for purposes of this paragraph are one unit, and what that means is they have anybody in that area has the same restrictions as we've had in Dillingham, meaning, you know, we're still under the mandate, and I think a lot of folks have forgotten, but we're still under the mandate that it's only critical travel that is authorized. You go to work, you go to the bank, you go get groceries, you go get your mail, that kind of stuff. That's critical. We got to really stress, don't come down or go up to Electigec and go hang out with your family. And those are some of the dangerous activities that the state is really trying to stay away from, and we're trying to enforce as well. So the permitted use is really, I think, will alleviate a lot. Well, will alleviate all of that permit system in that footprint, and that will help some of the frustrations and make that a lot smoother transition. Go to section 8 and definitions. We had to. I'd ask Brooks to kind of think about increasing the number or expanding the definition of critical personnel needs, and it goes with the paragraph we just talked about. It identifies, it actually lays them out, and we felt it was necessary to put it, you know, exactly what critical personnel needs is defined by. That's another change that I had asked Brooks to consider. Section 10, the permit application, as we talked about this process, minor thing here, it used to say the city clerk, and we just changed the language to make it the Dillingham DOC and then travel permit, and so that's who's handling it, not clerk. Let's see. The next one is section 16. This is a completely new section. and it relates to face mask requirement in the fishery related use district. And you can kind of read through there, talks about what can be used. Basically, if you're in the fishery related use district, you have to wear some type of face covering to help prevent the transmission of the pandemic. And Brooks, I think generally that's what I have written for the changes we made. And there's some typos and things like that, but I didn't, of course, didn't mention them. There's a couple of them in there that we picked out. Madam Mayor, that's a real quick general overview of what we're recommending from the last ordinance.
Okay, thank you, Todd. Brooks, is there anything you wanted to speak to specifically on the amendments that are being proposed?
Yes, good evening, everybody. I do want to kind of orient folks to the purpose of the ordinance itself. This ordinance, another emergency ordinance, because I think there's pretty general agreement, emergency that justified the first emergency ordinance is still with us. The virus has not been defeated. This can be adopted at a single council meeting.
Will everyone please mute their phone?
It would have a limited time period that it could remain in effect. That's something that would take you through a 2-month period. I know that the overall concept is that the community is about to receive an influx of a lot of people, a lot of different places, and that the data that we have that has been developed in Gillingham about how much of the virus is around, is of little relevance to assessing the risk associated with a lot of people coming from a lot of different areas and concentrating themselves. And then the other issue is that it's not just that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be concentrated in relatively close quarters and in a relatively small area of the city. And so the preventive role or plan that this ordinance vision is attempting to maintain separation from the people that are coming in and working in close quarters from a lot of different places and the people that live here in Gillingham. That's done by setting up a land use district based on the city's planning power and authority over land use, which is what we did before out of the airport. The idea is being transferred to new designated properties within Gillingham. When you describe that in a geographical sense, you then govern who can go into those areas and what can be done in those areas. So just by way of an example, it's probably not relevant, but I mean, to the extent somebody wanted to say, hey, I'm here, I've arrived to get my boat ready, I'm going to have a little party and have some friends that I haven't seen since I left at the end of last season, come down and we're going to hang out on my boat and socialize, you know, that's not allowed. That overall concept, create an area, establish rules for them. This ordinance does not have all the rules. A lot of the rules are going to be developed by this Section 13 that just requires people to obey the rules that are going to come up. Now, and the plan is that you'll know what those are when you come to vote on the ordinance. And I know there's probably in your packet the initial concept of what those rules will be is part of the information you have. And I think the other thing I'd like to point out is we've heard a lot of talk and anybody has listened to the governor, I think it's sort of a fact of life that the state is not interested in actually issuing citations for people that are not following any of the state mandates. Billingham is not the only community that's concerned about this, and so the approach that I've taken and is taken in this ordinance is we reference the state mandate in the local ordinance. We require people to comply with the state mandates, and then at the end of this ordinance, we have a section about enforcement, which is certainly not hauling people off to jail or anything, but it does provide the Billingham Police Department the authority to issue a citation with a monetary fine if they observe people violating either the state mandate referenced in the ordinance or any of the provisions of this ordinance itself. So we put together an enforcement mechanism. But I think we all know that the real success of this system is going to rely significantly on voluntary compliance. And nobody, you don't want to have to be running around and issuing tickets, but I think it's important to have the ability to do that because that sometimes encourages compliance. There's a lot of this ordinance that is section one that is a finding, and I just want people to know, get an idea, why do we put these in here? We do this because it's very important that there's an official record of, why is this ordinance being adopted? What are the reasons that very stringent limitations on traditional freedom to do whatever you want, sort of wherever you are in Gillingham, why are these being imposed and what is the purpose? And these are in here for a couple of main reasons. One is to justify why we're doing what we're doing if, in fact, it was challenged by somebody in an enforcement proceeding. And the other one, really, to be honest with you, is to send a message to the state of Alaska as to why we're doing this, because there's been sort of some backtracking by the state, recognizing that there is a need for more stringent local regulation, and then not every community is the same, even every fishing community. But at the same time, you hear people say we want the rules that you're adopting to be based on data, information, and not fear, and that type of thing. So within the ordinance, toward the end of Section 1, probably beginning around number 36, there's a number of things that are put in there that sort of reference what, at least as of today, probably hasn't been done by the state, but things change every day. And so when I hear that somebody's coming out there, the chief of staff, and maybe there's going to be a state plan for security, and these things could change even between this evening and when you're actually meeting to adopt the ordinance. So I'll be keeping an eye as to whether or not any of these things are still true, but from my perspective, the important part is nobody from the state has given the community any data as to what is the projected number of cases of COVID-19 that one would expect. We know that that type of modeling is done all over the place, but nobody's done it specific to Bristol Bay that we know of. And so that when you don't have that kind of information, you naturally want to be more conservative about what you're doing. It references some of the impracticalities of Mandate 17 and a social distancing given the constraints in Gillingham, unique to Gillingham, and then the idea that, we don't, if there is a plan for how you're going to transport sick people out of the community, I don't believe it's been known or published. Same thing for, you know, is there a plan for dealing with even the monitoring onshore of people that have symptoms and have to be separated from the rest of the community, either in isolation or quarantine. I don't believe the state has given us information as to, you know, what is the plan for that. These things are in there. Do they really have to be in there? Maybe not, but I think it sends a little bit of a message. So that's sort of my summary, and I can take questions and talk about it more if you want.
So couple questions. I'll ask Brooke the first one, or actually this may be Todd. So Todd, in adopting the ordinance tonight, you included in the packet the Commercial Fishing 2020 memorandum. That memorandum can be changed administratively based on what you find out from the health corps and the state on testing without changing that's not tied to the ordinance, is it? I guess that's my question.
No, that's the reason I wanted it in there is, you know, for you folks to see, for the council to see. Yeah, that's a kind of, you know, administrative rules in nature, but so we can change those as necessary. Just wanted to get that in front of you, because you're likely to hear, some of the ramifications or some unhappy people about this rule or that rule. So just, and I'd love to hear your discussion in a minute on time with it. Meeting would be great.
Madam Mayor?
Chris first and then Caleb. Chris Napoli and then Caleb.
Maybe a question to Todd and Brooks. I've received a couple comments, and obviously Dan Dunaway sent a letter kind of identifying the subsistence and the recreational use of Dillingham people up on the state parks and upriver, and those are usually trips that sometimes last overnight, sometimes a weekend, sometimes they're weather dependent. I don't see any permitted use for that. And then the other user group is I don't see where if the SETNET group is included in this. I see commercial fishing vessels. I don't think the governor's come out with anything with SETNETers, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's one of the mandates that's on its way, at some point. We still have some work to do. You know, there's going to be a lot of different unanticipated consequences, or I shouldn't say a lot, but there will be some unanticipated consequences, and I have to figure that out. I did have a discussion with Courtney about the set in that area, but I didn't have time. You know, the time just ran out. There's only so many hours in the day right now, so that's one of the things I wanted to visit with Brooks about and see if we can figure that out. And that might be an addition, as also the rules, you know, of course they draft on them. And the same for some of the things that Dan Dunaway posed. We've got to walk through and talk about those individual issues. I've had an overwhelming stream of emails and questions about exemptions for local people, and this person doesn't want to apply for this thing. So I've had a lot of challenges trying to figure out how that's all going to work. We just get a lot of folks that want to continue business as usual, but make everyone that comes here do something different, and that's going to cause us some problems. It could potentially become the vectors themselves unanticipated, you know. So we've got some more thinking to do in that area.
Well, I can comment a little bit on that, too. I want everyone to understand there's a difference between a permitted use and being eligible to get a permit. The reason for the difference is you have to identify specific groups that don't even have to get a permit. Just using the set netters as a way of example, they have to get a permit, as does every single commercial fisherman. That's in Section 9. But they're going to qualify for a permit pretty much automatically. So one of the policy decisions to make when you set up these categories is, well, you know, do we want to expand the universe of people that don't have to get a permit? And that's that's within the discretion of the council to do. But currently, set netters would be required to get a permit, but they would qualify to get a permit under Section 9, subsection 1. Recreational fishing and sport fishing is not within Section 9 or permitted use right now. And so that's a policy decision. Don't forget now, the authority of Gillingham is limited to what's going on within our boundaries. So somebody going up to the lake traveling out of Gillingham, and we don't have anything to do with it. I mean, that's a permitted use if you're traveling out of Gillingham. I think the way to deal with recreational fishing is going to be to either make it a permitted use or require people to get a permit. I mean, but to specifically mention it so people know clearly what has to be done.
Brooks, I wonder if we could just add that as a critical personal need, because fishing already is an essential part of the essential workforce, but it might be something we could just add as, or maybe it's already in there by the essential workforce policy, and that would allow them to go do, without permitting. I'm thinking out loud.
Sure, that's what work sessions are for. The essential work list is related to the commercial fishing. And this is an area where I have a feeling the state is going to come out with something very specific that relates to the set net fishing. And the state's position with recreational fishing is that it's fine to be doing that as long as you are following the social distancing.
Okay, thanks, Brooks. Caleb Westfall first, and then Greg Marksmiller next.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess this is back to Brooks. Two questions on clarification on Section 6 and Section 5. So permitted use, so as the language is written here, if somebody from the original Olympic was coming down to go to the post office and get groceries, they get gas and go back north, they would need to apply for a permit. They'd be permitted use under Section C, 8C down here saying traveling to Gillingham to purchase groceries or fuel, but they would still need to apply for a permit. Is that correct?
No, that was changed. If you look at Section 6A5, we're describing that situation as a permitted use.
So that permits, and especially they don't need a permit to do that, is what you're saying.
Right. So, and if they live outside the city, they obtain critical personal needs in Dillingham, and they're traveling Dillingham to do that type of thing, store, bank, fuel, et cetera. The concept is they don't have to get a permit.
Okay.
Saying if they're coming to Dillingham for work, that's in subsection 4. But if they're coming to Dillingham to visit a friend, then that's not a permit.
Yeah, that basically it's this same set of rules that Dillingham residents still have. That's in one of the mandates. You know, we can go get mail, go to work, go to the grocery store. You know, those critical personal needs, but that's it. Here, you know, that's what's still directed here. So all the rules are the same throughout, and that's one thing. That was one of the changes we needed to make to. For electric folks and make it just a little bit more streamlined.
Roger, thank you. I was just looking for that clarification. And the last thing about Section 5 is fisheries related use districts. As I read that, I'm a little confused on the language, and essentially I'm understanding if my neighbor Steve, this is a theoretical person, needs to change their oil to get, they need to go to Napa to buy oil and filter. As I read the language, it says that they essentially aren't allowed in the fisheries district number 1 here, and I'm looking down on page 17, I believe. And if they are allowed in there, they have to quarantine there before they can leave. Is that what the language says, or a resident can't drive into the district to launch the boat to go to fish or look at the whales? I'm just trying to figure out what that language actually means.
I don't have the map, so I can't say if Napa is in this fisheries related use district or not, but if it is and as designated by the map, then yes, that's the way this is worded. Once you went inside there, there would be a quarantine requirement.
Greg, you had a question, Greg Markle?
Yeah, thank you. I guess that was also a question of mine as well, so if I'm going to be able to launch skiffs. The other question was, there's many fishermen, whether it's set netters or drifters that have property in town that they live at and have their equipment at. And it looks like, maybe I'm not reading this correctly, that they are not allowed, they have to go to a fishery use district. And the other thing is, I'm kind of concerned that if we're going to delineate boat yards as those fishery-related use districts, Dusty Walls Boat Yard is not included in that. And so I'm not sure if that can be answered, if there's a reason for that.
I can jump on that first part with both you and Caleb. We do have the boat ramp out in the Wood River. That's not part of that district. If you look at the lines, you drive down on that road and launch from there. So that's where we're going to have everybody go to launch their skiff. It doesn't make sense to go down right in the middle of the harbor where we say, and this is where all the folks are that could potentially have the illness. And, you know, so, and I see you shaking your head, Caleb, and I get it. I mean, it's rough. But here's the thing is if we're going to do this, there's going to be some sacrifices. If we're going to protect our folks, you know, we can't have business as usual. I don't, you know, if you have another solution, then, it'd be great to hear. But everybody wants an exemption and a special deal. It's really hard to pull that off.
Greg, did you have another question, or did your question get answered?
Yeah, no, I was just wondering why Dusty Wall's boatyard, where there will be fishermen going to, is not a fisheries-related use district. I mean, that seems like kind of, it doesn't really allow that whole group of fishermen to comply with the ordinance as I see it.
Well, when they go to, I mean, do they? I guess they launch there, but yeah, I don't know.
So I saw this as a, it's presented as a an idea of how we might get a handle on the entrance of a lot of people. I didn't think either that it was necessarily perfect, because there are other places that probably are fisheries related, but there isn't any place that is 100% commercial fishing. Every launch we have may end up being used by personal and recreation as well, residents and non-residents alike. Is a good it's at least a good attempt to try to put regulations on a zone or an area instead of the entire community. And that was kind of complaints I kept hearing from people, were that everybody being lumped into the same permit requirements was, you know, a lot of folks were objecting to that, looking for unique. You know, my situation is different, so I need to be treated differently. And so I think this is a good attempt. It's not perfect by any means, but, and again, it could be counsel that the, you could put a, narrative description as the, for the fishing districts instead of drawing a map and, ask for a definition. It is a fish district if it meets certain criteria, and that way, you know, it could be sort of defined without using a map. I don't know whether that would work either. It crossed my mind, and I just don't know if it would work.
The other thing I might add, too, that is probably going to open up all kinds of discussion is this was anticipated to include local fishermen, because they mix with the fleet. So if you're a local fisherman, you have to go down, and once you get into that zone, then you're in that zone until you're done fishing. You can't go down there and hang out with the other fishermen, or you may land and do whatever and go home at night, and Steve, your neighbor, comes home and he might be, you know, a carrier, right? So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of rules in here and a lot of things that aren't going to make taste very good to folks. So got to discuss all of that.
So, Council, I know that there's a public out there that want to make suggestions and have things they'd like to share. And we are building up on, it's supposed to be the end of our workshop, but I'd like to go to the public side of this and let people chat with us about, you know, what they think about going forward. Before I do that, I would say, in case there's not someone on the line, I did get a call from both Tom Tillman and Courtney, and Chugiang did extend their emergency ordinance at a meeting yesterday. And they also, the other areas that they discussed were requiring masks. And I did mention to Courtney that it was in this ordinance. They had concerns about the travel permits. Some of those, I think, were addressed with these revisions Todd had. I don't know if they all have been. But again, this seems to be, you know, we keep evolving this permit system and can probably address them. Their concerns were people, obviously, within the immediate community that needed to travel, Luxembourg, and so on. They also had some concerns about people applying for permits from neighboring communities. And I think that I think some of that got addressed, and also it just may need to evolve some more. Anyway, how about if I go to the public and let's see if we get comments. So I'll try to do this again the way we have in the past. If you'll tell me your name, then I'll get you on a list. I did have two people that actually got a hold of me specifically, and that was Norm Van Vactor and Jeannie Timmerman. And so I think both of them were hoping to be on the list.